Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. You know, we've got an occasional series on American Variety called Genderology, and that's really, it's different aspects of how men and women deal with each other, of male-female relationships from different points of view. For example, we've had on people talking about how men and women communicate differently, and one show was on who's happier, men or women. Another one was on aging in men and women, how is it different, right? Another one was on, you know, the male-female differences that we all recognize. Are they learned and acquired, or are they biological? So in each of those shows, I have a female guest, and then there's me, right? So the constant is always, it's me and a female guest, but the topic is something that that guest is an expert on. And, you know, so it might be a lawyer or a physiologist or a doctor or a psychologist. And so in this case today, my guest is a marriage and family therapist named Mary O'Keefe. Welcome, Mary.
Thank you.
She practices in Johnson City, Tennessee, and has been in practice for 18 years doing that. And the topic is kind of a bombshell topic, really. It's one that's been on my list to do for quite a while in genderology. It's, is marriage obsolete? Or if you prefer the softer version of that, maybe, what's the future of marriage? And that's really what we're going to be talking about. You know, it's kind of prompted by the recent split-ups of celebrity couples. I mean, we're all used to the idea that, you know, that celebrities in Hollywood, performers, actors and actresses, you know, hop in and out of marriages about like they do in and out of roles. But people like the Schwarzeneggers and Al and Tipper Gore and John and Elizabeth Edwards getting divorced is kind of shocking still. You know, people who've been married 40 years and you would think had very solid partnership kind of loving marriages, and then they suddenly get divorced at an advanced age. It's kind of what? So it was prompted also by the fact that the Pew Research Center, which is a very well-regarded research organization, recently put out a study of marriage. And part of that, their finding was that about 40% of Americans think that marriage is becoming obsolete. And to be honest, I first had that thought back in the mid-80s as a young single professional man in the Washington, D.C. area because, you know, I could do most things for myself. I could shop and cook and wash my own clothes. You know, you didn't have to iron them. They were, you know, wash and wear. And things I couldn't do for myself, I could buy the rest, right? You know, I had a decent income at that point. So it wasn't really necessary to get married. And other young men around my age were kind of finding the same thing. And you know, we were surrounded by women who were working professionals like we were in the workforce. And so the old construct that had gone on for millennia of the man does the majority of the work outside the home and the woman is the homemaker, right, and raises children and keeps house and does a lot of things. They both work very hard. That old structure was falling apart and was increasingly becoming irrelevant, kind of. And so then what's the reason for getting married, right? So I guess what I came down to is the catch is what to do about children. And that's the big fly in the ointment as far as marriage possibly becoming obsolete, right? You have to answer that question. So that's what Mary O'Keefe and I are here to discuss today. So let's just kind of plunge in, Mary. I guess I was reading that over the past 5 years, about 2.3 million people have gotten married each year in the last five or so years. And each of those last five or so years, about 1.2 million divorces have occurred. So it is roughly around 40 to 50% of first marriages end in divorce. So you're a family therapist, and mm-hmm. you see this all the time. I mean, what are your observations in general about marriage versus non-marriage? Is marriage still as solid and necessary an institution as it once was? And and if not, you know, is that part of what drives your practice, huh?
Well, when we first were looking at this topic, one of the things that surprised me was just, even as you said, this is a bombshell topic, obsolete.
Yeah.
But as I looked at it and thought, what are we used to and how do we define marriage? If it's opposite sexed individuals, same race, same ethnic origin, same social class, et cetera, then that view about marriage is becoming obsolete. And we're in this transition period. A researcher named Cherlin talks about the deinstitutionalization of marriage, that we have become, we're coming from an era when things were so defined, the Ozzie and Harriet's, the father knows best.
Right.
So now, what are our roles and what are our expectations? And I think that we're in this transition, and what do we expect from it? And I think the divorce rate indicates this transition period and dissatisfaction and a searching. It's a little bit scary, these figures about the divorce rate, because separation within the family is probably greater than these figures represent because there's so many people cohabitating, and then they'll split up, and that's not reflected in the divorce figures. If you're not married, you don't get divorced.
Yeah.
And the scariest part of that is the implication for the children who could be involved in that.
Sure.
But we're really in this transitional period about what's the meaning of marriage. I think that there will always be marriage because I think that's a heart thing. I think we long for companionship and commitment, and we want that as a soulful kind of thing. So we will always be finding that. The symbolic nature of what marriage is, I think, comes really from our souls, but the practical living of it out nowadays is increasingly challenged.
Well, but, you know, it used to be that it was expected, too. I mean, you know, that societal norms drove you to be married. And, you know, there's the concept that the old spinster, who at the time, you know, 100 years ago, was a young woman who would be like maybe 28 and not married would be considered a spinster practically. Whereas today, you know, the age of marriage, I'm sure, has increased at least 10, if not 15 years on average beyond what it was 100 years ago. Probably most young women were married by 20 back then probably. And, you know, and now they're just a sophomore in college and nowhere near thinking of getting married.
For men and for women, the age of marriage has increased.
Yeah. Yeah, for both. Sure. So there's that. And then I think the social opprobrium associated with getting a divorce is much, much less than it once was, you know, because as it became more common, then the resistance to it among family and friends and people in your community and people you work with, that resistance and the attitude, the negative attitudes that may have been directed at you in the past aren't there anymore. It's pretty much normalized, right? So the kind of the resistance to getting divorced is lessened on the one hand, and the drivers for getting married on the other end are also lessened, you know, so it's kind of like you're not forced into being married like you once were, and you're not forced into staying married as much as you once were. So it's gotten to the point, really starting, I think, in the 60s, maybe it's gotten to the point of being an option, a personal option that everybody decides upon, whereas it once wasn't so flexible as that. Would you say that's true?
Right, yes. Well, there are some people who feel that whereas marriage used to be that right into passage of adulthood and that transitional moment, that foundational moment, it seems like in some ways you could say that it's flipped and it's not the foundational moment, but it's the capstone that we live together. We form our union of a sort. We test it out. We may split up. We may stay together after a while. We may have children. Then we get married.
Okay.
So there seems to be a segment in society where the marriage is very meaningful, but it's flipped, and it's now that end point, perhaps, instead of the foundational point.
Yeah, and there used to be, you know, there's a religious aspect to it as well, of course. That used to be the concept of living in sin. You're calling it cohabitation or whatever, but I think living together is, again, without being married, is so normalized now that that phrase is antique, living in sin. I haven't heard it in 25 or 30 years, you know, probably. You know, so that part isn't there, and that's, again, one of the drivers toward marriage that's dissolved over the last couple of decades.
Well, societally, it's very interesting, the recent marriage with Will and Kate. You look at the two of them, and then you look at their parents, that here is this, you know, the monarchy and everyone, the glamour and all, and we look up to them, and we have a divorce, which would have been unheard of in the monarchy, you know, a generation or two ago.
Sure.
And then we have Kate and Will who lived together before they got married.
Yeah.
So that you really can see the societal shift in accepting of those things.
Yeah. They used to call that, I remember in the 60s, the phrase trial marriage, you know. That was around the time that the living in sin thing began to dissolve, and they began to call it trial marriage. So that was easing into the concept of it being okay to live together, right? But, you know.
Yeah, there's a researcher who's looked at the living together aspect and talking about it as a social phenomenon, seeing it in four stages, that people living together, there was a time when that was this risque thing to do and the avant-garde did it, and then it became a thing, well, it's like a trial marriage.
Yeah.
Then it became kind of an alternative to marriage.
Yeah.
And the fourth stage is like you can hardly tell the difference between people living together and those who are legally married.
Sure.
And sometimes it's interesting. How do you know if your neighbor's married or not? You know, have you seen the certificate? Have you seen the wedding photos?
Yeah.
So I think there's that aspect of living together where it is a trial and it is equivalent to marriage in terms of the emotional bonds and all. But there's another aspect where it's this serial living with someone, maybe driven by economics, so that...
You mean serial monogamy?
Well, serial cohabitation.
Yeah.
Okay, serial monogamy, if you want to...
Yeah.
But it isn't driven with a focus towards testing out and marriage. It just is of its own.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, let's talk about that for a while. I think that marriage has always been different for men than it is for women. I mean, I'm gonna go out on a limb and say I think it's a more natural state for women, domesticity and monogamy and all that goes with it, for women than it is for men. And most of the times that marriages fall apart, it's the man who's causing it or doing it one way or another, I would think. And I'll ask you that. I mean, that's your business. You know, that's what you see all the time. But would you agree with that basic statement that it's more natural for women than it is for men most of the time? And everything we say in all these genderology topics, I meant to say that at the outset, is that nothing is 100% true. No mm-hmm. statement you can make about any of these things is ever going to be even close to 100% true. But we're talking about the middle of the bell curve where it's mostly true most of the time.
That's a tough one for me. I think that biologically, historically, anthropologically, yes, I would say that's true. I would like to think that we have grown emotionally, cognitively beyond that kind of level of just the biology. But yeah, I couldn't say that's entirely untrue. I know.
Yeah, once many years ago, I saw a curve of the number of years past marriage at which divorces occur, right? So it peaks at about 4 to 5 years. And so then working backward from that, it turns out that the period of great sexual attraction runs about a year and a half to 2 years into the marriage, or at least from the time they met and started, you know, getting involved. And then after that, there's a period of, okay, let's try to work things out. And then there's a period of deciding whether to actually go forward with a divorce. And then there's a period that the divorce actually takes, you know, some period mm-hmm. of time. And so that works out to add up to about 4 to 5 years for those that aren't going to mm-hmm. click, that aren't going to take, as they used to say, right? Then after that, those that last longer than that, the percentage of those that are going to succeed becomes much greater after that point. Well, you're listening to American Variety Radio, and I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with Mary O'Keefe, who's a marriage and family therapist in Johnson City, Tennessee, about the daunting and touchy topic, is marriage obsolete? So what do you see as the risk factors for divorce from your practice and your perspective, Mary?
Can I go back to talk about what you just were saying about 4 years in... And that's about the time of a divorce.
Okay, sure.
It's true that there is that relationship about sexual satisfaction activity, but also most people have children within the first few years of marriage.
Yeah.
Marital satisfaction, which is a reflection of the happiness of the couple with each other, that drops like a rock when you have children.
Oh, yeah.
There's a tremendous stressors that come into play with having children.
Sure.
And I think that it's our expectations sometimes about marriage that leads us to disappointment. Well, I guess in everything in life, disappointment is based on how high our expectations were about something. So while your coupleness might be suffering, and of course it will, you've got a totally dependent third entity in your home
yeah.
that you have to take care of, and it's going to take energy and time and effort away from the coupleness.
Sure.
If we can expand our concept of marriage and blossom it into family and realize that this third entity brings so much richness into our lives and look at that as a temporary, though long temporary time, then I think those first few years, and especially the post-childbearing time or the first child being born, aren't quite as disappointing or quite as stressful. Now, as time goes on and children grow and they're less dependent, then marital satisfaction can bounce back.
Yeah.
But you really take a hit when that first child comes.
Well, and one thing I've observed and heard men say, too, is that as soon as the first child appears, the woman's attention and focus goes very noticeably from the man to the child. And suddenly the man becomes kind of a third wheel to a great extent. And it's apparent to them that suddenly they are a breadwinner and a helpmate to the woman in the child-rearing process rather than, you know, the honeymoon ends then for sure. Whatever's left of the honeymoon at that point ends, and it becomes also then the stresses you mentioned. I mean, for one thing, you're only getting 4 hours of sleep a night, and mm-hmm. it's suddenly a lot more expensive, and there's a lot of anxiety around the child and their needs mm-hmm. and their health that wasn't in the household before. There's a lot of stress there that wasn't there of various kinds, you know, financial and in terms of physiological stress and noise and everything else, mm-hmm. you know, so the whole environment changes. And that change can be a real shock to a lot of men in particular.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because as we talked about this topic a little bit before the show, and I thought, I cannot recall ever in my marriage counseling hearing a man say that he felt basically abandoned by the woman when the child was born.
Oh, really? Okay.
I have heard many couples say, we miss each other.
Yeah.
We both miss the other with the birth of a child.
Hmm.
So I was talking with a friend of mine about this, and she does a lot of divorce mediation. And she said she hears very frequently exactly what you said.
Hmm.
I got a child and I lost my wife. So it occurred to me that perhaps that transition period of having a child is a real point where we need the village, where we need support so that a woman can fulfill what she feels is her joy of taking care of the child without having the guy feel like he's just shut out.
Mm-hmm.
And we can perhaps open a door for the guy to feel more a part of the child care and find the joy that's there in that. So I'm going to loop back to, if it's okay, the question you had started before about
yeah,
what are
fine.
Risk factors about divorce, one of which is children. Is
yeah.
a risk factor.
Yeah.
Being in a second marriage, every subsequent marriage, you have a higher risk of divorce.
Well, on the children thing, though, is having children, does it increase your risk of divorce or sometimes lower it? I mean, on balance, what does
right,
it do?
Both, yeah. I don't know what the balance is. It does both, in fact. I think that people have to be aware for exactly the reason you just talked about, gender-wise, how a man can feel.
Yeah.
We have to be aware that it could plant a seed of separation.
Yeah.
Between the husband and the
resentment
wife.
Resentment and discontent, yeah.
Right. So risk factor in terms of precipitating, I don't know, but risk factor in terms of separation, that could be the beginnings of a long-term feeling of distance.
Yeah, and from a hard practical standpoint, too, it's suddenly when there's a child, it's more difficult from the man's point of view to get divorced because then there's child support and also because a man would feel guilty and, you know, so those things come into play.
Mm-hmm.
It's different to leave a wife than it is to leave your whole family, you know,
mm-hmm.
from every standpoint, psychological and financially and every other way. So that may be a factor that actually holds marriages together, even if the man is feeling the discontent
mm-hmm.
we're talking about,
mm-hmm.
you know, so this kind of works
yeah.
both ways in a sense.
Yeah, my concern is that seed of discontent, if it's
yeah.
planted, you have to make sure it doesn't get watered.
There you go.
You know?
So I guess really what would happen ideally would be that before a child is born, every couple should be required to go to marriage counseling so that everybody's well aware of what's coming, and maybe the woman should work extra hard to focus on the man, and the man needs to be aware of how he's going to feel in 6 months or whatever. So what was the second risk factor for divorce that you mentioned?
Having a previous marriage.
Hmm.
There's every time you marry, again, it increases your risk of divorcing.
Okay. So it gets easier, like many things in life.
Well,
the more you do it, the easier it gets.
Well, that is, you know, an issue you kind of wonder is twofold. Is it easier because I've done it before and I don't work as hard?
Hmm.
Or is it that
you're predisposed to do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
sure.
Other factors could be if you date less than a year before marriage, the implication that you don't know the other person as well.
Mm-hmm.
A pregnancy at the time of marriage is a risk factor for divorce.
Oh, yeah. What they used to call the old shotgun wedding. So that's
mm-hmm.
that's not not exactly a marriage made in heaven when somebody's holding a gun to your head, so to speak. But not that they hold a gun to your head anymore. But
mm-hmm.
there is obviously a pressure to get married if you are involved heavily with, you know, a man with a woman and she's pregnant. Then
mm-hmm.
that's a precipitating factor to get married.
Right. What I often have heard in these situations is, well, we had talked about getting married and we had planned on getting married.
Yeah.
And the decision was really finalized because of the pregnancy.
Yeah.
Which, you know, leads the question of, well, what if there hadn't been the pregnancy 6 months down the line? Would you
yeah.
have confirmed that same decision or said it's been wonderful to be together and we've learned and grown, but we're going to break off the engagement. It just isn't working.
What about people whose parents got divorced or didn't get divorced? Is that a factor in what you see in terms of a couple's willingness to get divorced or to think about that?
What I think I'm seeing more of now is a reluctance to get married.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's
if,
a part of
if the parents
it,
were divorced.
If the parents were divorced.
So they're
kind of
gun shy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm, okay. But you don't see those people. You don't see the people who are reluctant to get married and didn't get married because they don't come to you as a marriage counselor.
Well, but it's interesting. They do. And it's really, to me, quite poignant because people will call sometimes and be pretty shy about, well, we're not really married. And it's like, if you need help, I'm here. I'm available. You don't have to be married to have that dynamic, you know, that emotional dynamic and connection.
Well, along those lines, do you do premarital counseling?
I do some premarital counseling. And having premarital counseling is a protective factor against divorce. There are some programs, so to speak, that are out there where individuals fill out a paper and pencil kind of thing. Mm. Now, I suppose you can do it on the internet. Mm. And these are analyzed, and they look at a variety of factors: communication skills, decision-making ideas, how you use your leisure time, your ideas about finances, and they compare and contrast the people's responses.
Yeah.
And while that may not stop someone from getting married, that a therapist might go, oh, I got lots of red flags here, at least the people are entering into the situation with awareness. But those are very helpful.
We're talking with Mary O'Keefe here on American Variety Radio about the question, is marriage obsolete? Or really, we're talking about the future of marriage and what is the outlook for marriage. She's a marriage and family therapist in Johnson City, Tennessee. So I've never looked at eHarmony and Romance.com. Oh. Those are the two big internet sites. Mm-hmm. But you know, it used to be that people met in a more organic way at work or at the grocery store or whatever it might be, through church. But the population of people they met who were potential marital partners was much smaller because mm-hmm. of that. They happened to bump into them based on the size of the circles they moved in. But on the internet, those circles are worldwide practically, or certainly, mm-hmm. Countrywide anyway. So have you seen any patterns of people who met and got married on one of those websites or through the internet in general, whether it's chat rooms or, affinity kind of blogs or whatever? Do you see any differences in their real compatibility, in their longevity of their marriages versus other people?
I haven't seen that many of those kinds of situations. I would be very skeptical, but I'm not of the generation that was born wired in. The kind of things that they have on these computer dating things on the internet, it's a whole different ball game than, like, the granddaddy of them all, I think, of these premarital things is a system called Prepare that came out of research done by a man at the University of Minnesota. Years and years worth of data and reliability and validity, and I somehow just don't feel like eHarmony's stuff is that good, although maybe.
But you've looked at it and seen on eHarmony, the questionnaire they have you fill out is not as thoroughgoing as that?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, the other thing to keep in mind in talking with you, a family therapist, is that you don't see the marriages that are really happy. They don't come to you. So you just see the ones that are in trouble in one way or another, mm-hmm. to one extent or another.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them may be only a little in trouble. But then again, it's expensive to go to a therapist. I don't think it's covered much by insurance, barely anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And, so that's a kind of a hurdle to get over. So I suspect you see the ones that are bad off to some degree or another. I mean, how would you characterize them? Are they minor train wreck, kind of fender benders, or are they head-on smash-ups?
I think it's the whole spectrum. And clearly, this just like a physical situation, a physical illness, it's better to go as soon as you see a symptom than to wait. But there's a whole spectrum. I tell people sometimes as I meet with them, and it appears to be a really difficult situation, I tell them you can always get divorced, but you can't always heal it. So give it some time. So I really play for patience, that let's just look at the situation. Let's try to see if there's some solutions and increase in compatibility and such. You can always file for divorce, but once that train's left the depot, sometimes you can't heal the hurt that comes from that.
Mm-hmm. Is it usually and mostly women who are pushing the decision to come to you and other therapists like you?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Women will talk about feelings.
Almost all the time, yeah. So they're the ones who want to try to fix the marriage. When the men come in, are they most of the time semi-willing to try to fix the marriage, or are they already sitting there with their arms crossed and it's a done deal to them and they're just going through this?
I think it's much more than semi-willing. I think the difference is that a woman will look at counseling as a viable way to work on the marriage, because
yeah.
women will talk about feelings,
yeah.
and a man will like to do other things to work on the marriage,
uh-huh.
maybe ignore the situation.
Yeah.
I don't mean that to sound maybe quite so judgmental, but a man will often say, okay, the past is the past, and some things happened,
yeah.
and we made mistakes, and let's go forward from here. And so it's not that men don't want to work on it, but working on it by sit, talk, listen, that's not what most men want to do.
Yeah, it's an awkward thing, especially they don't know you,
Right.
It's one thing to talk about that with their best friend at work, maybe, or something over a beer or whatever,
mm-hmm.
but totally different in a kind of a medical situation in a way. Well, it strikes me that the temptations in our society are greater now, and the opportunities to change are greater now. I mean, there's, you know, again, with women in the workplace, men are running into women and working with women all the time, much more than they used to ever 50 years ago. And, you know, so there's more, the grass is always greener phenomenon is much more in your face now than it was 50 years ago in the internet than we always hear, you know, about people who are up, you know, secretly having an online relationship with a woman mm-hmm. three states away at midnight or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that goes on, and that never did go on before. I mean, you know, you couldn't mm-hmm. write letters or something. It wouldn't happen 50, 60, 70 years mm-hmm. ago that much.
Well, and a problem with the internet, it is a temptation in terms of, you know, a heartfelt thing of finding some attachment with some person that's more fantasy than reality, but also gaming and whatever people are doing on the internet. I'm just not that wired, but internet addiction.
Yeah.
Sort of, if that's kind of a slang term, but that's a detriment to a marriage because, you know, the other one, and men and women can get involved in that, just cruising the internet and looking at this and playing games on the internet, the other partner wanting companionship and like, turn it off.
Yeah.
Can we be together?
No, that's quality time that's being squandered on something, you know, that's of no mm-hmm. real use in terms of your relationship. Well, we're getting toward the end of our time, and as always, we could talk easily for another half hour, if not another hour and a half on this topic that I think everybody basically is interested in to some extent or another. But Mary, what do you see as the outlook for the future of marriage from your perspective, again, as a family therapist? Are there other alternatives to the standard marriage that are likely to replace it 20 years from now that you see kind of growing as real viable alternatives to marriage?
Well, I think cohabitation is growing.
So just living together.
Living together is growing. I think that's a part of our need for a one-to-one connection. There are those who think communities could be a thing in the future.
You mean sort of like communes, but not hippie communes? That kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah.
Not communities like a town, but living in a compound, so to speak.
Yes, where numerous couples or families are living within a small geographic area.
Okay.
And they may share fellowship hall, so to speak. I don't know what other word to use, but have a communal kitchen and some sort of a hall. Well, that in our society would be a good substitute for the extended family. We don't have so much with our mobility. But it doesn't, to me, answer exactly the heart-to-heart connection. I think that the hope for marriage really, or committed relationships, involves realistic expectations. We're living infinitely longer. Well, that's not true. We're not living infinitely.
But it starts to seem that way.
Our time of marriage has gotten to the point where we're living so long that we are potentially married as long as people used to live their entire lives.
Sure.
So we need to have a realistic outlook and expectation of our emotional, physical, spiritual needs over the lifespan and not expect perhaps so much from our beloved.
Yeah.
They're not going to fulfill all of our needs, and we may shift in what we feel is important from when we're 25 to when we're 50.
Sure. Well, we have to leave it there, Mary, and I appreciate you so much for being on with us talking about this possibly touchy topic, is marriage obsolete? And I think we've covered a lot of ground, and there's a lot more ground to cover, and maybe we'll come back and do it again sometime before too long. Mary's website is at maryokeefe.com, so that's O'Keefe with two E's and two F's, right? maryokeefe.com. Thanks for being on.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks to you all for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.